tell us about your emergency carrying in your vehicle sort of thing.
So you imagine that we are not actually through with winter. There's going to be something that happens again. It's going to snow at least once
more. Is that true, Patty?
We hope so.
We hope we're not through with winter because the plants don't need to be through with winter.
We need to talk about that. What are the plants doing? You know, we need to talk about the importance of wood.
Here we go.
You give us the poop, and then we're going to go scoop.
Okay. Which of these items do you have in your car right now? No peeking. No peeking, Robin. Do you have a flashlight? Anyone? Yes. Two flashlights.
No.
No. First aid kit?
Yes.
No.
Uh-uh. Oh, okay. We got one first aid kit. A small shovel.
Yes.
There we go. Two.
No.
Oh, oh, Jim.
I know.
How about jumper cables?
Yes.
No jumper cables? You got to have jumper cables. An ice scraper?
Yes. Yes.
You have that. Yeah. Okay.
I'm tired of using my credit card.
Yeah. Okay, here's one. Flares. Do you have flares in your car?
No.
This is recommended.
Who's recommending this?
The Idaho Department of Transportation, or the Transportation Department, ITD.
I bet you they own stock in flares.
Okay.
You know?
Kitty litter. Yes.
No.
We have one kitty litter, and that is for
traction.
Throw it down.
Like sand.
How big of a bag do you have?
I go and buy the unscented, non-clumping, cheapest 25-pound bag of kitty litter, and I carry one in my car, and I have one in my garage. And the advantage of kitty litter, it works as well as sand, but it's much lighter. And I can't carry those 50-pound tubes of sand.
I was wondering.
What do you have against scents? You know, you said non-scented.
Non-scented? Because it's cheaper. I mean, you don't need the scent.
Uh-huh.
And you don't want it clumping. You just want the plain clay litter.
Okay.
All right.
And it doesn't have an expiration date. You can save it for next year if you don't use it now.
Absolutely.
And if you have a cat, it's, you know, never will go to waste if you have a cat or two.
Maybe you need that in an emergency, the cat.
The cat. Yeah, the cat has those claws, the traction. Crampons, built-in crampons.
Yeah,
there you go.
Hook it up with a toe strap or something. Have the cat pull you out. Winter clothing, waterproof boots. Do you have an extra set of anything? No? No jackets or anything? Okay, we got... how about water and snacks?
Water?
Water?
No snacks.
No snacks.
I usually have my water bottle with me.
Okay.
But that's all weather. That's not... You have your water bottle with you in summer and whatever.
Yeah,
so that's sort of like an all-time thing.
Yeah. A full tank of gas to keep your car pretty close to full in case you get stranded somewhere.
Above half.
All right. Full windshield washer fluid.
Yes.
Okay. A phone charger.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, Jim. Chains for your tires.
I have winter tires on. Okay.
Winter tires, yep.
Okay,
and four-wheel drive.
How about a blanket?
Yes.
Two.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, Jim, you were striking out.
I'm listening to Patty and Robin. I go, what room do they have in the car for anything else but the driver?
Well, I was just going to say, when you get all this stuff in the car, it does definitely... impact the amount of room you have for other things.
For when you go to Costco.
Yeah, that's right. And I drive a smaller car, so it's a consideration.
I don't do much driving elsewhere during the winter months. I stick close to Sandpoint, except when I'm not here, mind you.
Yeah.
How much do you have in your car? And you, who have a young one.
I know.
Who you need to be responsible for.
We have a few of these things. I do keep a flashlight in the car.
Okay.
Part of that is because it's fun for James to play with. water and snacks we never travel without anyway.
I bet you he'd love kitty litter.
Yeah, we do not keep kitty litter.
I bet you James would just play in it.
Yeah, and flares. We don't have flares. I don't think. I think actually I do have like a nice, somebody gave me as a birthday gift or a Christmas gift one year, like a car emergency kit that I've never really even gone through. It just sits in the back of the car and it's probably got some of this stuff in there. I know it has jumper cables.
One of the things that you should add, I think, is one of those really an emergency vest.
Ah, yeah.
It's orange with the glow-in-the-dark stripes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and they fold up into about the size of nothing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just stick that under your seat. It's a really handy thing to have. You just put it on, and then you will have less a chance of getting hit at night.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Good Wise. Idea.
Well, underneath the seat, though, that's my flotation device.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's in an airplane.
Yeah.
I get so confused. Wow.
I know. Well,
I'm going to have to do some shopping.
I guess so. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting and good information.
Since we might have some snow.
We might have some snow. That would be Monday.
When we get rain down here, maybe skiers or mountain people can let us know. Is it snowing up there?
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
It has been a little bit, I think, but also I heard it was rainy last week.
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask Robin and Patty about the importance of winter to the native plants. what does winter do?
Well, up here, we're in one of the colder zones. I think we're officially zone 4. And so winter is a big part of our year-round weather. Mm-hmm. And plants, well, as you notice, the trees, a lot of the deciduous trees all lose their leaves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your shrubs will lose their leaves. A lot of your flowering plants will die back. And they get covered with a blanket of snow. And that blanket of snow can act as a little bit of an insulator against the super cold.
Like we had, three weekends ago?
This year, we had a snow in October, a fairly heavy snow, but then it went away, and then we had some super cold when there wasn't a lot of snow on the ground. So I'm a little concerned about dieback of a lot of plants. Mm. And then when the snow goes in the spring, the other importance is for water retention and slower water release. The more snow we have up in the mountains, the longer our water release happens. So we get water later into the spring before it's all gone up higher. So two things. One is protection of the plants while they're under the snow, and the other is more water. So if we don't get rain during this, if we have an early snow release and all the water is down off the mountains, then if we have a really dry summer, we're looking at drought.
So what are the plants doing in winter? Are they their root system getting robust and strong and waiting for spring or?
Yes. Obviously, in spring and summer, they're focused on leaves and stems and flowers and fruits. Mm-hmm. Winter, they're focused on their root systems. And so actually, sometimes it's a good idea to do your planting in the fall.
They say that with a lot of bulb things.
Well, bulbs you do for bulbs you can plant almost any time, but in the fall, yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing a lot of transplanting, you don't want to wait too late that you bump into frost.
Right.
But if you plant them in the late summer and then water them if it's a dry summer, you know, help them get established. But then in the winter, they will focus on their root systems.
One other thing that I've noticed is that the native plants that are from the colder climates don't wake up as early as other plants. So that the first year after we planted our showy milkweed, which is one of the native plants that attracts beneficial pollinators and hopefully monarchs, the milkweed, I thought they had all died. And I was like, where is the milkweed? And I kept looking and looking in this native plant patch. All of a sudden, there they were. But way, way later. They are adjust themselves to their climate. So they would come out later than an early bird kind of warmer weather native plant. But a lot of the native plants, I think, are slower to wake up in the spring.
Hmm. Yeah, we plant our garlic in the fall. And oftentimes, you know, it's a raised bed by the driveway. And I'll, as I pull a car in, I'll ponder, What are they doing under? Are they knitting? Are they watching television? Yeah, I wonder what kind of sense of community they have. What the garlic is doing? Because all of a sudden in the spring, poof, magic, you know. And what have they been doing? Have they been having fun? You know,
probably. Yeah,
I think they just sit there and watch their thermometers.
And they, ooh, we're going to beat the milkweed this year.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk about the Native Plant Society, and or do we want to talk about the grant first?
Well, let's get the grant in.
Okay.
Because it's the deadline is the end of this month. You get an extra day because it's leap year.
Oh.
Yes. And so the Lois Wythe Grant was established to honor the founder of the Native Plant Society, Lois Wythe. Mm-hmm. And about back in, I have to look at my cheat sheet, 2009, a group of people got together and said this would be a great way to honor Lois. And so since 2009, the Native Plant Society has given, started out $150, and now it's up to $500.
Wow.
For a worthy project. Mm-hmm. And the application, I'm just going to run through my stuff here. The application's online at our website, nativeplantsociety.org. Yeah.
Okay.
If you look up Nick Native Plant Society, you'll find it for sure. And it's under the Lois Wythe Grant tab. And it's an online form, which is really easy to fill out. And our committee then, after the end of the month, looks at those and decides, these are all really good. Which one shall we choose?
Yeah, I have a question for somebody out there who, what do the grants go to? Can you mention a few of the grants in the past that have been awarded so that can give people ideas?
So recently, I have a few things written down here. One, a few years ago, went to a University of Idaho grad student who was doing a floristic survey of Boundary and Bonner counties. So this has to be, whatever you do has to take place in Bonner County. So that counted. And so she was spending all of her summer in the wild looking for, cataloging plants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that went to her, and she used the money for her sketch artist and photographer.
Oh, cool.
And a few years ago, they did a native plant planting around the Kootenai School flagpole. So there's a small garden around that full of native plants, and they've taken really good care of it. So it's nice. Last year, we awarded the grant to the Kootenai School Rewilding Project that is being done by the Kiniksu Land Trust. And it's a huge, wonderful project. I don't know if people know about that big piece of land that Kootenai School has right adjacent to it. And they're building paths. They're doing signage that this grant is paying for I think 13 native plants that are already there. Bushes, flowers, trees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And it also went to a coloring book that I was part of.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yes.
You came on the air.
A good one.
We did.
And we talked about that.
Yeah. So
are you
going to
do another?
Nothing in the plan.
Nothing in the plan.
Waiting
right
for inspiration to strike.
Oh, well, there's plenty of inspiration, but you know, it's a big project to put together a book.
What about just your common citizen, your resident? Anything for somebody who wants to do a project in their own backyard?
That would be less likely to be funded.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is mostly focused on like educational.
Yes. Education, conservation, and appreciation. So, you know, way more likely to be a public kind of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's the Lois Wythe Grant. The last day is Thursday, the 29th of February. And you can go online to the website at
nativeplantsociety.org.
And get all the information.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wanted to find out more, like, you know, I'm thinking of proposing it, but I don't know if it fits underneath the parameters. Is there a person they can contact, or is there a place on the website where they can submit the question?
There is a mail link at the bottom of the Lois Wythe Grant page.
Excellent.
And it will go to me, and I will answer your questions.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful.
And speaking of our website, we have recently redesigned it. And it's very much more friendly and easy to use, has a lot of information on it. So if you're at all interested in native plants, check us out at nativeplantsociety.org.
And let me give a promotion to Robin. She's been working really hard in the last few days. Both Robin and I were involved in the website redo, and the website designer has taught us how to go in and do things.
Oh, cool. Empowered you.
She's empowered us. So Robin spent the last couple days uploading 33, I think I counted.
Something like that, yeah.
Plant notes, all information and pictures of native plants.
Excellent.
And there will be more. For the last 3 years, we've been sending plant note articles to the Daily Bee, and they've been printing them on Sundays. They're now going to a wider group of papers that are in our similar environment and would have similar native plants. But they will all be on the website eventually.
What's the definition of a native plant?
A native plant is a plant that was here before European settlement. So many of the native plants out here in the West were actually discovered and collected by the Lewis and Clark expedition. So a lot of them have scientific names like Lewisii or Clarkii, those kinds of things, because they were first discovered and collected by Lewis and Clark, and then they were sent back east to botanists who checked them out, cataloged them, decided, yes, they are a new plant, and named them. And so it's kind of an interesting history of the plants. And a lot of plants, too, that are not native were brought here by settlers. They were people who were coming from the east. They were plants that were used as herbs or medicinal plants or for their fibers or something like that. So we have this definition that the native plants are the ones that were here before white men moved west.
But that means then they were being used by the original peoples of this area previous to that. And there are lots of uses that the native people put these plants to. And they named them. And there are native names in the Salish languages here. So there is a rich history there.
History behind.
Of local people's use of native plants.
Well, I'd be sort of curious. You mentioned, Patty, that one of the previous grant was to a university student to go out and take pictures. Do you come across any new ones like, we don't have any idea what that is? I mean, did she discover
she
any?
She found one that had never been found in this county before and never been found in North Idaho before.
Go away.
And it was called, it's a moonwort. And you can look, there's a picture of it on our website. Okay. It's a teeny tiny little thing. It doesn't look like warts. It's very lovely. The difficult part of that kind of discovery is then you find out that the immigration people want to put a road right where it is. And so there was some back and forth, and I don't know if anybody's been up there to double check it, but
like an endangered species.
It wasn't quite endangered. It was rare.
Interesting. So that would be like a scavenger hunt. Like I think as a kid growing up in the area, you know, go out and find something new.
Most of the plants that flower or are trees or shrubs that are obviously easy to see have been named. Where we're finding unnamed things are more in the fungus and
the lichens sort
and
of thing.
Things that are less obvious. Though there are experts who go out and purposefully look for those things.
Oh, what fun. Yeah. What an adventure. Okay. Well, you're the historian, Patty.
A rather newbie historian.
A newbie historian. That sounds like a...
fairly new to the Native Plant Society.
A paradox.
That's true, yeah.
Wrapped in a conundrum.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, like jumbo shrimp. That happens. So a little bit of history of the NPS.
Well, it was started by Lois Wythe and a bunch of friends. supporters, she said, hey, what if we have a native plant society? And right away she said, what if we have an arboretum? right away. And 60 people showed up for that meeting and said, yes, let's do that. And then the search was on for a location, which was tricky. So the first location that they considered and worked with University of Idaho on was the property that is now University Place, or was the extension office where we used to cross country ski.
North Boyer.
Yeah. You got it. Yeah. And there was a piece of property that kind of sticks out into Sand Creek that they were considering, but that didn't work out. And then they looked at putting it out where the Water Life Discovery Center is. Help me out, location-wise.
On Lakeshore Drive.
Lakeshore Drive.
Okay.
And that didn't work out. And then they started talking to the city, and the mayor at that time, Paul Graves, was very excited about the project. And they sited the arboretum in Lakeview Park, where the fairgrounds used to be. And there were some beautiful mature trees there. And I think we've got about, what, an acre and a half? Something
about
like
that.
Yeah. Of property there. So the history of the arboretum is integral to the history of the plant society. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's what has started it and motivated it and continues to be, I think, a central focus.
And this is the 25th anniversary?
This is the 25th anniversary of the dedication of the Arboretum.
Oh, okay.
It was dedicated on Arbor Day in 1999, and we are working on some kind of celebration on or around Arbor Day this year to commemorate that. And it's a wonderful place where people can go and just wander around. It's very tranquil. It's very peaceful. A lot of people walk their dogs through there, and it's just a really lovely spot. And it's all maintained with volunteers. Labor from the Native Plant Society and of our friends.
How does one become a member of NPS?
It's very easy.
Oh, it's so hard.
www.nativeplantsociety.org. You can become a member online. Mm-hmm. If you come to any of our meetings, we have brochures that have membership forms in them. I think there are maybe some brochures at our little tool shed there.
Might be.
Sometimes there are. Mm-hmm. And we love new members, and we have wonderful monthly meetings. Except for the summer, July, August, and December. But we bring in speakers who talk on a whole range of subjects, from individual plants to ecosystems to pollinating insects that affect the plants, all kinds of things.
Well, I have a question. I'm an avid huckleberry picker. Has there been any progress made in domesticating the wild huckleberry?
Very little.
Great. I love that.
In fact, that's what the research was at the Boyer property.
That's right. I remember
that.
That
was a huckleberry research place, mm-hmm. and that researcher didn't have much luck. It's a real tricky thing, and I'm one of those people who thinks huckleberries should stay wild.
I totally agree. Totally agree. 100%. And
they just don't like the lower elevation.
That's part of the charm. Isn't it part of the charm, though? It's wild.
Yeah.
You know, and nothing that you can do thus far can make it into something that grows in your backyard. And I just think that's special.
One of the things that I think is important to understand, too, with climate change, we're seeing native plants, the ones that like really high places and colder, they obviously have no more places to go, which is something to seriously consider. Mm-hmm. But some of the lower elevation plants and some of the researchers from University of Idaho are working with some plants from southern Idaho, bringing them up here to see how they do. Native plants from southern Idaho. Now, there are some people that are upset about that.
I was going to say, is that fair to bring native plants from one geographic area to another and say, oh, you're native too? I imagine the native plants in that area would get sort of upset. You know, like, hi, we're native up here to North Idaho. Who are these newbies?
Well, a lot of people think that about not just plants.
I was going to, yeah, it's kind of like the people who move here. You don't become a native unless you were born here.
But I think that's something that we have to keep in mind, is that that the populations will be shifting with temperatures, and what's native, you know, 100, 200 miles south of us may creep our direction. Just to survive. It's a matter of survival. And native plants are survivors.
Right. And that's a natural process. Yes. Now, bringing them up here to see how they do is
totally different.
Oh, that's human intervention.
That's human intervention, yes.
We're here with Robin Campbell and Patty Erickson from the Native Plant Society. And we've been talking about the Lois Wife Grant. And I'm going to put them on the spot after we take a music break. You know, I'm just going to ask them a question, and they're going to have to deal with it. It was on this date. I like to do things on this date, and I didn't like the choices for February 1st, so I went back to January 31st, and it was on this date in 1970 that the Grateful Dead were arrested in New Orleans for drug possession and barbiturates and all those things, and as the result was the creation of the song called Truckin'. And of course it gives us that great line, what a long strange trip it's been. But we're for all you deadheads out there, and hey, deadheading, you know, that's a botanical phrase,
a gardening phrase.
It did dovetail in wonderful. We're gonna play I put on the 5-minute version, but we can bring it down you know, after we get a little bit tired of it. But here's the Grateful Dead on this date, in not this date but yesterday, Truckin'.
Truckin', got my chips cashed in. Keep truckin' like the doo-dah man. Together, more or less in line. Just keep truckin' on.
That was the Grateful Dead off their American Beauty album from 1970, Truckin', that on January 31st, yesterday, they were arrested in New Orleans. And the result was this creative outburst or whatever, this incredible song. Huh. It's part of the Grateful Dead canon.
Is American Beauty their best studio album?
That and Working Man's Dead. Okay. Working Man's Dead was before American Beauty. I'm sort of partial to those two, but they're a live band.
Yeah, right. That's what everybody thinks of when they think of the Dead. We're here with a couple members of the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. Robin Campbell is a board member. Patty Erickson is the chair of the Lois Wife Grant Committee and the historian of the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. A historian. How about that? I don't know if you're... We didn't clarify if there were any other historians.
Oh, I think most members are historians. I just happen to have that title.
Okay. The website, by the way, is just Native Plant Society, so nobody has to worry about spelling Kinnickinnick.
Spelling it.
Which is quite a coup, I would think. There must be other Native Plant Societies who you had to probably fight.
Would love to have that name.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yes, we're very fond of our name.
Yes. Anyway, nativeplantsociety.org is the website, and I think we were just talking during the break about a program that you guys just hosted, talking about what is a native plant.
That was such a fascinating program.
Yeah.
We had a horticulturist, two people who run nurseries, a landscape person. Was that it? Was it four or five people?
Yeah.
And what a fascinating conversation about what is a native plant. Nativars, cultivars, there are all these different terms that have come into use and in the nursery trade and things like that. And the conversation was really fascinating. There weren't a lot of disagreements. I was privy to the original conversation in which there were more disagreements. What would
one disagree about?
Well, what does it mean to be native?
Oh,
and
got
what
it.
Is
okay.
and what is okay. a cultivar got and what it. Is okay. a nativar?
Okay.
So fascinating.
Well. Would you care to define those terms?
No, because I'm not a specialist in those things. But there are disagreements, and there are purists, as you mentioned, Jim. Mm-hmm. There are people who are very, very strict about it, and then there are other people who are much more liberal about their interpretation of what is a native plant.
One of the things that happens naturally is many different species that are closely related will hybridize.
Yes.
In nature,
got it.
And there are also plants that will double their chromosomes, and they do a lot of strange things in nature. So you've got this happening in nature, but then you've got horticulturists doing it on purpose and hybridizing and selecting and kind of speeding up natural selection
process.
To get what they want,
mm-hmm.
and so. There's, like Patty said, there's a lot of disagreement about what's acceptable and what isn't, and how do you define native. So botany is a very complex subject, actually, with some real ethical questions and things going on.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I have a garden, and if I bring native plants in and I give them Miracle-Gro and things like that, that sort of is changing the nature of them just being where they're found, where I'm sort of, like I used with the word with huckleberries, domesticating, because, you know, mm-hmm. I can give them more water, I can trim them back, but nature, they just work their magic.
But if you're providing, if you've moved them, then you do need to take
yes.
care of them,
yeah.
because
yeah.
you've changed the soil in which they are trying to grow,
mm-hmm.
and so you may add amendments to your soil so that this native plant can thrive.
Yeah. Okay, but then becomes a domesticated native plant,
right.
as opposed to just a wild native plant. Right. I like that notion of wild.
And native plants, too, tend to grow kind of in communities. Like you find one
right,
native plant
right,
associated
right.
with three or four others.
Right.
And you probably aren't duplicating that in your garden. You've picked this one because you like the flower, but then you pick one from another community over here because you like something
mm-hmm.
else about
mm-hmm.
it. You're making an artificial native garden. So
it's interesting that you say that, because I think when I'm out huckleberry picking, I'll see, I know very little about what's around me, but I'll see some interesting little plants or whatever, and then I'll go 50 yards and there aren't any.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the intriguing of why they decided to cluster here as opposed to elsewhere. And that's got to be fascinating and fun.
Well, and there's so much we don't know about yet, about the microorganisms in the soil and stuff.
Mm.
The relationships between the plants and the microorganisms and the little ecosystem that gets created around a certain area. So it's very complicated.
It reminds me of the film Fantastic Fungi. Have
yes,
you seen that?
Yes,
you know, I
it's
mean,
wonderful.
When you go underground and you see all this incredible stuff mm-hmm. going on. Also the novel, The Overstory.
Yes.
You know, but
wonderful.
Yes, exactly. Both of those. Makes me want to be a native planter.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can be a Native Plant Society member.
I know I can.
It's very inexpensive.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Jack, you're just sitting there. Are you thinking about your area?
Well, sure, always. But I was thinking actually about the arboretum. How do you guys decide? I mean, to what extent do you maintain that? And to what extent do you just kind of let it do what it wants to do?
Well, it was a disturbed area to start with.
Yeah.
It was not native. It was a fairground.
Right.
So
right.
it had been disturbed.
Yes.
And so they originally mm-hmm. the plan was to just plant what would be the understory in those native trees, or they aren't really all native trees actually, mm-hmm. but in those overstory trees that yeah. plant the understory. But it's moved on from that, and the people who plant things in the arboretum are very careful, very, very careful to make sure that they are native plants. But we did have a bit of a kerfuffle last summer about that very thing, because we took some pictures of a native Gaillardia, a blanket flower, and then people said, no, 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 that's not the native version. And what is it doing in the arboretum? Ooh. And then there was much conversation about the particular Gaillardia and whether it was or was not a native plant and who put it there if it wasn't. And but we learned a lot about Gaillardia and the fact that they hybridize like crazy. And therefore, this brighter colored one that didn't quite look like the native species that we have in our native garden, you know, there was controversy over whether this plant actually belonged there or not.
Somebody came in the cloak of night and put it in there.
Yes. Oh. So people, we bring things in. I think we planted pine grass. I think Ken Thacker planted quite a bit of pine grass in one area that was getting overrun with noxious weeds. Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing process.
And obviously, the arboretum is not a natural garden.
Right.
We kind of defined areas that could simulate different habitats, like an area where the soil is usually drier, areas where the soil is more moist, areas that get more sun and less sun. And like the wild, those things change. A windstorm comes through and a tree knocks down, and now we have more sun in that spot. Mm-hmm. And we're noticing a few places where plants are not doing as well because they're either getting too much sun or now not enough sun or too much moisture or not enough moisture. So it is a little bit artificial. On the other hand, it was our way of helping to educate people sure. on the native plants. They can go to the arboretum and actually see something. And then when they're out in the wild, they'll be able to identify it. They'll say, oh, I saw that at the arboretum. Mm-hmm. So it's a hybrid kind of.
What we've been doing in the last probably six or 8 months as part of our 25th anniversary of the arboretum is we've been doing a lot of planning ahead. And so we're in the process of writing Master Plan 2.0. The original Master Plan was one page with like 8 bullet points. This is going to be much more detailed. But we've done brainstorming. We've done a formal survey with our members, getting a lot of feedback. We did another session at a meeting recently, getting more feedback on what people want. How we might change the arboretum, what should stay the same, what's important in the arboretum, all that kind of thing. So looking forward to the next 25 years of what we want this to be.
Well,
I'm finding all this fascinating. You know, I want to go back to disturbed, this disturbed area. Usually that's a word that's been applied to me. Uh-huh. And, you know, I just find the language and the intensity, you know, I'm quite sure of the energy in a discussion over whether this plant belongs there or not. I think that's wonderful that people are passionate about this.
People are.
You know, and, you know, I think, you know, we all need to be passionate about something. And I love your enthusiasm, you know, both you, Robin, and Patty, your interest, your enthusiasm, your energy, your commitment to making this area just a more incredible place and studying it, what's here.
Well, I think one of the directions that we're going, which is equally interesting, is that most native plants have associated native insects. These insects either act as pollinators or they lay their eggs on the plant and the plant feeds the larva and gets it through its stages. So there's this real interconnection between the plants and the insects. And we've had programs on butterflies, for example,
bees.
Yeah, you mentioned monarchs.
Right.
Yeah.
What, the milkweed? Monarchs love milkweed?
They have to have milkweed leaves.
The monarch lays its eggs on milkweed. The larva eats milkweed only. So if there's no milkweed, they're in trouble.
That's why they are in trouble. Yeah, a narrow diet, you know, you got to expand. Yeah. Well, and I imagine that with the insects comes birds.
Yes, absolutely.
And just...
Birds and hummingbirds especially are great pollinators. The birds are great, other birds are great seed spreaders. Mm-hmm. They eat the seeds and then go somewhere else and drop seeds. So we get a lot of spread that way. And so it's a whole ecosystem.
Right,
it's everything has a role to play. Everything works together.
Before we run out of time, you guys have to talk about what's coming up on the 17th.
Go ahead, Robin.
You do it.
The program?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know enough about it.
Oh.
Wild Ones Northern Rockies, promoting environmentally sound landscaping practices.
Right. Wild Ones Northern Rockies. Wild Ones is a national organization, and there's a new chapter here called Wild Ones Northern Rockies. Mm-hmm. And they have a mission that kind of overlaps with KNPS regarding native habitats. And so the person who kind of started the Wild Ones Northern Rockies chapter is going to be speaking to us, and we're going to be looking for ways that we can support each other and work together. And
that's Saturday the 17th.
It's Saturday the 17th at
the library.
The library in the large conference room, and we're there ready for the public at 9:30 with treats and coffee and tea.
Perfect.
And then the program begins at 10, and it usually runs about an hour. And it's always very, very interesting.
And you can find information of this on the website.
On the website.
Located at?
www.nativeplantsociety.org. You'll find information about that. And then do you want to remind about the grant?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Before we go. The grant. February 29th is the due date. If you have questions, just go to the website again and click on Lois Wythe Grant. And you can send an email to the contact there. It'll go to me, and I can try to answer your questions.
And before we let Patty and Robin get into their day, I want to ask the question, you know, that they're in their car with all of their flares and shovels and everything, and there's room for one native plant that's near and dear to their hearts. What would you create room for?
I would have an envelope full of showy milkweed seeds. I wouldn't need the plant. All I need are the seeds. But I've just fallen in love with that plant because the blooms are beyond gorgeous. They are just elegant and beautiful. And then the whole...
butterflies.
The butterflies, a lot of bees, a lot of pollinators. And then the fact that we might be encouraging the resurgence of monarchs is important. But, you know, it's easy to take a package of seeds.
Okay. And?
Well, the plant that came to mind when you popped the question is the sago lily or the cat's ear lily. I have a little spot on my hill where they come up every spring. It's a little typical lily rises from a bulb down in the ground, and they're fairly deep, which is why it's very hard to transplant this plant, and there aren't any of them in the arboretum. But it comes up, and it has a little white flower with three, they're actually sepals, but they look like petals that fold out. Mm-hmm. It's kind of yellow in the center, and it's hairy inside. So it looks like a cat's ear with the hairs that cover the ear. They're very sweet.
And I take it they spread via bulb?
They can spread by seed. I mean, they do make seeds. Yeah,
okay.
After the flower is done blooming, it makes a little capsule with seeds in it. And the bulbs do spread. But they don't spread a lot, and I don't have very many of them, and I just love them.
Ah, well, wonderful. I want to thank both Patty and Robin from the NPS, KNPS, for taking time out and sharing. And keep us on your radar.
Yes, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk to Sandpoint about the Arboretum and our organization.
Oh.
And I would strongly encourage you to walk through the Arboretum.
Okay.
It's beautiful any time of the year. Right now, it's wonderful to walk through. It's a wonderful place to take kids because there is fog and it looks wonderful. And if you look up at one point, you will see a bear cub. There is a bear cub who lives in the Arboretum. And I'll leave it at that so people can...
And its location?
It's on South Ella, right next to the museum.
Right next to the museum. Thank you both so very much. We don't have much time left, do we?
We have, yes, very little.
Okay, I just want to... At the Panada Theater this Saturday, probably the film that is going to win the Academy Award for Best Film.
I'm going to write that down.
I'll write that
down. That's your prediction.
You know,
Okay.
Book it. Oppenheimer will be at the Panada Theater at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock for $5. And I highly recommend the movie. It's intense. It's no matter what you've heard about the length, it's the quickest that I've ever seen something because you're so wrapped up and involved in the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it.
I think I'm going to that one. I don't know if I'm going to the matinee or the evening show, but I think I'm going to one of them.
Don't bring James.
I know. Yeah, I know. I think that's I'll go by myself for that one.
Okay.
There's a... at the POAC Gallery, there's a reception for a Lucy West exhibition. The event... The exhibition will go on, I'm sure, longer than, doesn't say how long the Lucy West artwork will be hanging at POAC, but the reception will take place on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. That's tomorrow night. If you want to go to the checkout, for one thing, if you haven't seen the new POAC Gallery over on 2nd Street, check that out. And then this is a chance to see and talk about artwork with an artist, Artistry in Orbit. The Lucy West exhibition is the title of it. Follies tickets are on sale, and the sled dog race at Priest Lake is canceled this weekend.
Yes,
due to weather.
Absolutely. Happy February 1st, Jack.
Here we are.
Can you believe that 2024 is 1/12 over?
Yeah.
Okay, let's not think about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Alrighty. it's time for Bird Note.
Whoosh.
And then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. After that, should we, and we'll start off Otto's Eclectic Mix with something from Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about that?
Not much. Just in 1970, on January 31st, they were doing a television special. And I don't know what the songs they played, but talk about a musical group, short-lived, but, you know, from 69 to 71 and something like 14 top 10 hits, and they really made an impression, and they still do to this day.
The only band, as I recall, that was like in serious competition with any of the British bands for in terms of singles penetration at that time. That was the only American band that came close.
And when I first heard them, I thought they were from Louisiana with Born on a Bayou and Bad Moon Rising. And then you discover they're like California.
Yeah.
And you go, boy.
Yeah.
Disappointment.
Okay. I know. All right. It's time for Bird Note. Thanks to Robin and Patty from the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. And stay tuned for Bird Note.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
I know. Yeah, you're gone. All right. We'll be back. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY Pend Oreille.